Hello, 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 everybody. Can everybody hear me? Am I projecting to the back, to the stands back there? Okay. Hi, welcome to Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. Thank you for coming. So this is our, if you're new, this is our second year here at Hop Farm, and it's our 51st season. The series was started back in 74, we believe, by Jimmy Savetic, and he ran the series forever until, you know, till his passing a few years back. Jimmy set the standard, he set the tone, and Joan and I are just trying to live in his wake. He's a beautiful guy. If you didn't know Jimmy, he was a poet, he was a police detective, he was a veteran, he was a boxing instructor, he was a movie star, he was a bon vivant. He's a beautiful guy. We loved him, and we hope to keep this going as long as we can in his spirit, in his name. So thank you for coming out. We're at Hop Farm. We want to thank everybody here. Matt Gowan's the owner, everybody who works here. Eric is at the bar tonight. He's your server. Be kind. There's a lot of us here. So your patience is appreciated, and he'll get your orders as quickly as he can to you. If you need to order from back here, there's the little QR code in front of you, or you can go up to the bar. Either way works. Okay, I think that's the house stuff I have to deal with. So thanks for coming. It's, again, a weird time to be running a poetry series in this country. I thought we had gotten over this, but no, not so much. I received in my email boxes these past couple of days, which I'm sure a lot of you have seen, the NEA pulled their grants from local organizations, City of Asylum got their grants pulled, funding for Pittsburgh Arts and Lectures got pulled by the NEA, money that they were counting on for their seasons and all of the events and great things that they had in store. So one, I want to say, you know, if you can get out and support any of the local organizations like that, please do. More than ever, we are relying on that. We're completely grassroots. We just show up here and read poems. So we don't need government funding, but you're just showing up at any of these events, whether it's at Hemingway's, in Arts and Lectures, at City of Asylum, that support in itself is important. Even if you can't buy a ticket or pledge money to the organization, just showing up and being present is so important to all of us behind the scenes. So thank you for that. So when I was a kid, we lived with my grandmother. We lived in my grandmother's house in East Liberty. And at first it was a duplex. We lived on the top floor. And then we had financial troubles. My dad was out of work. So we had to move downstairs into my grandmother's flat while somebody else lived upstairs. Got a loan and we got to move out, and my parents got their own house when I was 11, their first house, the house my mom still lives in. Not long after we moved out, there was a break-in at my grandmother's house. She was out playing bingo, as she did, as often as possible, and we don't know who, but somebody broke in, persons, rifled through everything, pulled everything apart in the kitchen, threw food on the floor, went through her closets, stole some old jewelry. That was really all my grandmother had at that point. But before they left, they also decided to take a giant shit in her toilet and just leave it sit there. And I remember hearing that story when I was a kid and just not trying to get my head around, why would you stop in the middle of ransacking somebody's house for money or drugs or whatever you're looking for to do that? It just seemed unnecessary to an 11-year-old. Even an 11-year-old thinking, like, that's too much. If you follow the local writer Brian Broom at all on social media, or if you just know Brian, a few months back, he wrote a post about just how he was feeling post-election and trying to, you know, get his bearings. And he said something to the effect of, when I wake up in the morning, I feel grimy. I feel like I'm covered in filth when I wake up. And that's how I start the day. And when I read that, I immediately, my mind went right back to the break-in at my grandmother's house and the shit in their toilet. And I thought, yeah, that's it. I feel that way too. That is how I feel. And it's not enough that the people who broke into my grandmother's house violated her home and her sense of self and space in that way. That's enough, really. But they had to desecrate it. They had to make the space unclean, that you could not be in the space anymore without thinking about that, without dealing with that reality of what somebody did in your home. And that's how I think it feels right now for a lot of people. I think particularly for people who are in the arts or adjacent to the arts, and who are trying to just be and trying to express humanity right now. So, in that spirit, I'm glad you're all here tonight, because instead of the desecration, the violation, the separation of each of us into a personal, isolated camp of us, me against you, against you, against you, we are together. And we might not agree on everything. I doubt that any of us do. That's fine. We're not supposed to. We're human. Politically, personally, we're not supposed to. It's the conversation that matters, where we get together. And tonight we are together. And I know for myself and for Joan, that means everything. To listen to another person express themselves, their written words on the page, their own humanity in this kind of space, the back room of a bar, how ordinary is that? That's not highfalutin, that's not, I know, this gilded thing elsewhere. It is real, it is here, and the fact that you are willing to listen and to intersect with that and interact with that speaks volumes of your own humanity. And it also, it's the reason why the people who do this writing do it. It's to communicate. So, I wanted to read a Richard Brautigan poem for you. Yeah, there's the fan. This is one of my favorite, my all-time favorite Richard Brautigan poems. And I thought of this, I always come back to this poem, because you'll see. This is called Betty Makes Wonderful Waffles. Here's the poem, two lines. Everybody agrees to that. There is common ground for us to reach, even if it's just fucking waffles. And this is more important than waffles tonight. So from the bottom of my heart, Joan, Don, everybody involved here, thank you so much for coming out tonight. And I'm going to hand it over to Joan.
No worries. Okay. Okay. Thank you all for being here tonight. And I really completely share those sentiments. Thank you, Chris. Exactly. I have before me the tip jar, and I'm going to start passing it around. And I hope if you could please, if you could put in a dollar or whatever you can for our wait staff, which consists of one human tonight, Eric, who has been great. And if we can just thank him, we love this space, and it's always good to be kind to the wait staff because they work real hard. And he's flying solo tonight, so here we go. And somebody just bring it back up here at the end. Okay. Okay, so I'm Joan Bauer. I started about 14 years ago or something like that, co-curating this first with Jimmy, and now I'm really thrilled to be doing this, helping Chris do this series and doing it collaboratively with him. I am so grateful for Chris. I'm very grateful for Mr. Sterica over here, my partner, who does the audio and does the photography, and Scott, who is assisting on audio, and our wonderful Hop Farm venue. Tonight, we're going to have five poets reading. I believe they're all actually reading poetry. They're not all reading poetry. Okay, they're not. Okay, well, forget that. Okay. They're reading whatever they want, okay? That's the rule. You read whatever you want. And we will take a break after the five poets read for the group photo, which is very important, so please, poets and writers, do not scamper out of the room without coming to the back here for the group photo. And then we will proceed with the open mic. And we do have some spots for this. And I want to thank all the poets and writers tonight for your craft, your dedication, your imaginative world, your life experience, and all you're sharing with us that helps take us beyond our own little bubble, our own little place in the world, and see a greater world. And I am always humbled and thrilled to hear the work that is presented by these astonishing poets and writers in this series. And first up is M. Soledad Caballero, a professor of English and world gender sexuality studies at Allegheny. She has two books. I Was a Bell, published in by Red Hand in 2021, which was an International Latino Book Award winner. And the second collection, woohoo, coming out, called Flight Plan, which is coming out from Red Pen in 2025. She is an amazing poet and a dear friend. Golly, wow. Please welcome M. Soledad Caballero.
Hey, y'all. How's it going? I'm Soledad. It's really wonderful to be here. I'm really grateful for the space. I want to thank Joan and Chris and Hemingway's. And really, this is a good vibe, right? This is the antidote to the bullshit. And I hope we can keep that going. I'm going to try to read poems that are not depressing. And so that is one thing I'm going to try to do. I don't actually write very many of those, so I've kind of had to cherry pick them. But here we are. The first one, this is my first book, I Was a Bell, you can get it at Bookshop. They've got it at White Whale, they've got it at City of Asylum, and my second book comes out September 2nd, called Flight Plan. So if you don't know me very well, you will after these poems, in that I am a bird of prey groupie. I love a bird of prey. I think a bird of prey is probably my favorite creature in the world because they don't care about me at all. This is my first of two poems about birds of prey. This one's called Someday I Will Visit Hawk Mountain. I will be a real birder and know raptors by the shape of their wings, the span of them against wide skies, the browns and grays of their feathers, the reds and whites like specks of paint. I will look directly into the sun, point and say, those are black vultures. Those are red-shouldered hawks. They fly with the thermals, updrafts, barely moving, gliding their bodies along the currents, borrowing speed from the wind. I will know other raptors, sharp-shinned hawk, the Cooper's hawk, the ones that flap their wings and move their bodies during the day, the merlins, the peregrine falcons, soaring like bullets through blue steel, cutting the winds looking for rabbits, groundhogs that will not live past talons and claws. I will know the size of their bones, the weight of their beaks. I will remember the curves, the colors of their oval yellow eyes. I will have the measurements, the data that live inside their bodies like a secret taunting me to find its guts. Or this is what I tell myself. But I am a bad birder. I care little about the exact rate of a northern goshawk's flight speed. I do not need to know how many pounds of food an American kestrel eats in winter. I have no interest in the feather types on a turkey vulture. I have looked up and forgotten these facts again and again and again. They float out of my mind immediately. What I remember, my breathless body as I look into the wildness above, flying, raptors flying, diving, stooping, bodies of light, talismans, incantation, dust of the gods, creatures of myth, they hang in the sky like questions. They promise nothing, indifferent to everything but death. Still, I catch myself gasping, neck craned up, follow the circles they build out of sky, reach for their brutal mystery, the alien spark of more. So the second poems are, the second bunch of poems are from my, they're not a bunch, by the way, don't worry, are from my second book called Flight Plan. And this is a poem that I didn't realize at the time, but now when I was rereading it, ends up being a lot about COVID and about T1. I'm trying not to say the full name. And so 45, the orange dude. But in the midst of it, I found some poems that were about love. So this is a love poem, I think. Obeyed for Ricardo. You look calm, like the ocean before the wind catches it, shakes it awake, wide with sound and aching. I have not slept for hours, red-eyed in the darkness of the night, my brain unable to grab sleep, my thoughts like bullets bursting out, erratic staccato speculations. I watch you as the light breaks open through the blinds, noting the movement of your mouth, your eyes, your rib cage, studying the heat of your skin, the heat of your mouth as you dream and sleep into the next dream, the next breath. I lie with you, my heart choking me, my will shaken as I watch you sleep, scared to wake you, scared not to wake you, caught knowing that one day I will lose you, one day you will not wake. And in that moment of terror, when the light is just casting its light on your face, I wish for one thing only, that we face death together, that both of us take the ride into Hades, hand in hand, in that boat that no one ever gets to leave, and we sing. It's kind of a love poem. I mean, you're going into hell, but you are, in fact, with your lover, so I feel like that's important. Two more. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2015 and had treatment in 2016, and this is my ninth year since. So I ended up writing a lot about that. Who knew? So this is called Odd Fellows 215, which is also my office in my academic building. It's also a love poem to my students, actually. Here is where the tumor grew. A small hill with wild ants, browns and blacks the size of grains of sand, or maybe the size of gray water-worn pebbles. It grew here in this yellow and brown second floor room, where students come trudging up the stairs in bleak light of winter, sit and cry in my purple chair about mothers, exams, insurance bills. In this room where I hand out Kleenex, it grew, like kudzu along the walls, lace of green, thick veins and tendrils, like the curl of a question mark. When did it start to bloom, this tissue, this mound of fat and cells with teeth? When did it burst through the walls, thick like rope, a tight, hard rock vibrating heat? I grew here too, young scholar, bright from the nightmares of grad school, arrived already blue after battles with theory. In this room, I started reading again, for the first time, it seemed, gathered up books, blood, wanted to remember the joy of the thing. How much I longed to find more than flaws in metaphors after grad school. In this room, I tried for magic. I tried for more than being lost. I tried for something like love. Now, two decades in, what am I exactly? Not as new, not as tender, not as. But words seem small for this metamorphosis, as I learned again to feel what time can do for the scars of learning. This tumor grew, a silent bomb, a shadow coal creature without light. These cells found life inside me, made a whole universe with mitosis, clung to the soft parts of my body, and flung themselves into living like wildfire in a parched forest. After all the months of poison, of mouth sores and night terrors and sweat, I am back in this room again. There is an aching, silent hole inside my right breast. The room is still the color of canaries after rain. The books, the words, never seem to have left, as if they burrowed a place inside the shelves. A home of black ink and paper. Again, I sit here in this room of my life, after the war with raging cells, waiting to find the new world again, waiting to see what this body and love and time can do. Am I done? Okay, so my last poem is about books, because I love them. And I'm not a good gardener or farmer or anything to do with the outside or bugs, but somehow gardening came into this poem anyway. It's called In Pennsylvania. Sometimes there is more love in a book than in the whole day. After the darkness bursts open, the pages offer words lighted, bright despite the rain outside. Ember moment of reading when the hazy swirling possibilities are still just beyond reach, and there's a pounding ache to find the center of the story, the middle soft parts, ripe and tender, the heart of fruit just picked off a tree, the smell of wet dirt lingering on the skin, my mouth anticipating the wetness of my tongue. I've walked the fields all day, sweating, cutting weeds, digging out slugs, watering my paper crops with vowels, with sounds, with song. I am no farmer, no grower of food. I have always hated mud and dirt, the smell of animal shit. I cultivate books as if all the fields of my life were still waiting for new seeds. What strange things can I find in a book? That seems a small question. Maybe the question should be, how can I live long enough to eat all the fruit I've yet to plant? Thank you.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I think some of our poets do have books for sale here, and we'll just mention that, and you could approach them and just check on that. And I want to say one other thing about the series in general. What Chris and I have tried to do with it is to make sure that every year half of the poets or writers reading are people who have never read in the series before. So that is the case this year. We hope that will be the case every year. And the next poet happens to have never read in the series before, other than in the open mic. Mark Dignam is originally from Dublin in Ireland, and celebrates this year his 25th year of living in Pittsburgh. He is a singer-songwriter and has toured with many named musical artists, yes. And his work, his poetry, with or without a guitar, revolves around the themes of love and nature, family dynamics, and yes, how we can live better, emotionally healthier lives in a challenging world. Please welcome Mark Dignam.
I'm used to doing musical shows, so I have no idea how to pace a poetry thing. So I'm kind of terrified. Do I go all Bukowski or Mary Oliver? Maybe a bit of both. I don't know. I'll start with a song. This one's not on a record yet, but it's... have you gone to see Sinners yet? Anyone got to see a few? The rest of you, go see Sinners. It's a great, great movie. When I thought about doing this song tonight, I was like, I would have loved to have this song in Sinners. It's an amazing movie. And it's it's a driving song. I do a lot of it, have done over the years. The chorus is a bit of a tongue twister, but if you can get in with it, jump in.
Ribbon of stone, ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm gone. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. That's it. Ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm gone. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. Rolling down through West Virginia, along the banks of the old Ohio, the funniest thing you'll ever know is any place can be home. On the ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm going. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. Cruising with the rubies in the right-hand lane, as the diamonds flash by in the left. The kings and queens, they lean in green, the sun sets in my chest. On the ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm going. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. Bugs in the window and creaks in the chassis, it's a golden road out to Cincinnati. But don't you worry, you're not alone. I'm waving to you from the ribbon of stone. Ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm going. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. Ribbon of stone, carry me out to where I'm gone. From the tree steel rivers to my good friend's home, I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone. I'm all a flutter on the ribbon of stone.
All right, here's my first one. This is called Not Today. The trees will come and claim us if we sit too still. It's not a terrible thing when the time comes, but not today, my heart. No, certainly not today. We must surely keep on moving, shake and shake, twist and turn, for time is the ivy on the walls of all our homes. Creeping ever closer, yearning to embrace, to still our busy fingers, kiss us on our faces, to coax us off our road, to say our day is done. Sit us in the grass, quiet our busy tongues. Yes, time, yes, in time, you'll have your say. But not today, my heart, not today. I've decided to single-handedly rescue the Irish language all on my own. So at the very least, I've started titling a lot of my poems or writings in Irish. So the name of this one is Tógara, which means take care. And I guess it speaks to the time that we're in a sense. It asks you to be careful of the artists. Pray that the artists don't stop calling you in from the cold, that they don't grow tired of their eternal task, put down their tools, watch you grow old, through long, bleak, soundless, dreamless nights devoid of soul, leave you freeze in the darkness, in the vacuum. Watch you don't push them out to the circle's lonely edge, think you've won a drunken battle, whereas instead, knowing nothing of the scheming raven hidden in the hedge, you'll fall to endless war in your silence. Standing on a precipice, you think you've won the grinning moon, but she's only hanging round to see the dancing, hear the tunes. You cut the cord, she'll leave for Venus all too soon, and your walls will end forever empty. Yeah. This one I just finished today, which is a terrifying prospect. But here you go. On Lauer Mott, which is the good book. Don't get me wrong, I'm all about the books. Those near magical instruments, worlds within, splashy slow motion fountains of fantasy, history, science, the arts, wild narratives of the heart, the mind, dare I say the soul. At times, dark, foreboding receptacles of our ugliest sins. At others, tricksters, clowns, redolent with romance, as adventurous as a roller coaster, platforms for our most jubilant salvations. Personally, once opened wide, I feel each one release the butterflies of life to flitter in golden sunshine with their bellies bulging, satiated with the sweet nectar of just a fraction of the knowing that's out there. And with just that tiny fraction, I've often been so easily pleased. But I'm bound to bow before no book, particularly those singled out as above all others, that look to coop up in the kitchens over half our population, that have swords put in their hands to inflame pious, ignorant men, to pierce the hearts of children, reduce them to the tangled string and cracked, tattered cross braces of anonymous marionettes in the corners of cities turned to rubble in their name. Without reservation, I say, fuck that book. Or at the very least, the imbecilic interpretation of that book. Let me get this page to turn. Where's my professional page turner? Wood pulp turned to pages, filled with wisdom wound within and between the lines. It's there, it's all there and more, bound by wonder. But we are equal to the word. We are the word, and therefore we have a say. Let all the books be our trusted companions, guides on the road through the long dark nights, when at times we stumble in the endless beige, formless desert. Let them be the flag of our being, our time here, unfurled for the future to see from its far-off hillside. But never our king. Never our intellectual or spiritual jailer. Never our priest. Never ever be a weapon. Not one book, not three or five. No matter how many, I will not bow.
Yeah.
Pages underneath a fan. Yay. Canarig, which is the Irish word for canaries. The canaries in the coal mine, they're shuddering in fear, knowing they have nowhere left to hide. Hawks circling in the darkness they created, hoarse screech getting closer, shattering the quiet. They feel the searing breath upon their tiring wings, in the chill, dim, powdery air, hearts sinking in the wake of prayers forsaken, and knowing, as solid as the rock, death is coming closer. Did ye not read the history books? Did ye not understand? They never stop at canaries.
Yeah.
I guess it's next week. Next week it'll be 5 years since my mother passed, which was a very difficult thing for me when it happened. It was during the pandemic, and I was here and obviously wasn't allowed to travel. So I literally had to watch my mother's death over a phone, which, you know, outside of all the Amazon advertising is not the way you want to do anything. So this one's for her. It's called On Carta, which is the card. There you are now, Ma. Jesus, you're looking great. I love the hair. Kind of a bouffant thing you've got going on there. Back to your roots, is it? It's some 1966 thing. Are you off out dancing? Will you be getting up to sing? Your smile there, Ma. Sure, it's like a summer's day, shimmering on the River Liffey, flowing out to the old Dublin Bay. 'Tis wide and epic, has a warm place for it in every heart. You've assembled quite an ensemble there, Ma. Fair play to you. You look the part. But if you don't mind me inquiring, if it's not too much to ask of you, how come you're all two-dimensional on a shelf in my room over here in America? Ah, wait. There's all this writing beside you. There's a date, and Jesus, another date beside it. Bastard heart-stabbing bookends. So they are. Calculating rats. Murderers draped in numerical garb. Traitors at the gates. Constraining you, maintaining the vile digits of loss. Assailants, criminals, villains, hoods, hidden there amongst my comforting books. I watched your last breath, Ma. Watched it on my phone. Watched it there, because the plague wouldn't let me go home. I know it wasn't that that took you. It was the isolation carried you away. Was I robbed? Was I spared of being trapped in grief high up in the air? Ah, here, back up there with you on the shelf. Sure, look, Ma, you know yourself and all. I love the hair, and sure, all that other stuff, it's neither here nor there. To tell you the truth of it, I've been invited out to this thing, and I'm going to go off to see the dancing, and you never know, I might get up and sing. Miss you, Ma. Am I doing all right? That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark. Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Our next poet and writer is Jane McCafferty, author of two short story collections, two novels. She has received an NEA grant, two pushcards, all sorts of honors. Her first book of poetry, and I love this title, The Sea Lion Who Saved the Boy Who Jumped from the Golden Gate, was published in 2024. She teaches writing at Carnegie Mellon and with the Mad Women in the Attic. It is really thrilling to have her here. Please welcome Jane McCafferty.
Thank you, Joan, for the introduction. Thank you, Joan and Chris and Scott, for setting everything up and for the whole series. And thanks, everybody, for being here. It's really an honor to be here. This is a portrait of a friend of mine, a young friend of mine who I had, who I was lucky enough to live with for a while. It's called Jesus Alejandro. Jesus Alejandro, called Alex, is tiny and six when he and his family come to live with us for a while. Tiny and kinetic, moving in his body like a gymnast. In my first memory of him, he pulls a chair over to the kitchen sink and stands filling his cup with water. I stand beside him, and he looks at me, this stranger whose house he's living in, and says, "Are you high?" Later, I'll learn he's a great mimic. And are you high is a question gleaned from one of the YouTube shows he likes. He and his family lost their home, three kids and a mom who isn't doing well, beautiful kids, and the two girls not as shell-shocked as you'd imagine, given their situation. Alex is the youngest and needs more than the others, so he and I bond. I call up to wish him sweet dreams each night, and soon he starts calling down the same to me, along with, "Sleep with the angels, Jane." He's addicted to video games and loves one called The Evil Nun, and he's happiest when I sit with him on the steps and watch him defeat her. He's had so much trauma in his life, it's affected his ability to learn. He turned 7, then 8, and still can't read, though I'm trying to teach him, and he's doing a bit better in a small classroom at Arsenal School. He begins to confide in me a little. I learn he secretly loves a girl in his class whose name I can't repeat, a pinky promise I made. I learn he wants to be a black belt in karate one day, that he thinks about God a lot and thinks it's really sad that I'm old. He wants to know if I'm scared to die. I buy him a chin-up bar, and he's often swinging on it or doing pull-ups, then asking me to feel his muscle. He always has a stomach ache. His bright black eyes host sadness, but also curiosity and suspicion, lots of mischief, and sometimes a mysterious, knowing light. He hangs on banisters until they're loosened. He paces, and he loves to shake his body as if he's being tasered, another thing he's gleaned from a cop show on YouTube. Do I think maybe he could get a taser? Could we go buy one right now, he wants to know? Or maybe a money gun. What in the heck is a money gun, I say, and what a stupid question. It's a gun that shoots money. What else would it be? I want a gun that shoots Benjamins, he says. And when I say what? He has a little fit. Come on, Jane, don't you know who's on the bills? What I really want, he says later the same day, is a Lamborghini. Do you like Lamborghinis? My friend, I wouldn't know one if one ran me over. Jane, you have to know Lamborghinis. And why wouldn't an 8-year-old who lost his father to ICE, they hauled him out of his own bed early one morning before sunrise, tossed him into jail and then back to Mexico, he who'd made a good life here for his family with a successful construction business, why wouldn't a boy who watched his family implode, who then lost home after home, why wouldn't this boy want to be the man in the Lamborghini commercial behind the wheel of a sleek-looking car, I Googled it, that costs roughly 6 times more than the average family makes in a year? He's a struggling night owl in a family of struggling night owls. They get alerts when ICE is lurking here in the East End. He drinks a can of Coke in the morning before he gets out of bed for school. That's not very nutritious, I tell him. I wish you'd drink some milk. Jane, it gets me up. I'm not his mother. I have to tread softly. After school, he wants another Coke. I give him milk, macaroni, and cheese. But he's obsessed with his other desires. I just want money, Jane. I want money so people will think I'm cool. You don't need money to be cool. Besides, you're already so cool. Why am I so cool? Your spirit, it's amazing. But because he has an obsessive streak, he wants to talk about money, guns, and Lamborghinis again. Let's talk about something like, I don't know, trees. Remember you wanted to help the trees last year, Alex? You were sad when I told you some of them were dying. You really seem to care about those trees. Now all you want to talk about is money and guns, and I'm tired of it. Let's practice some reading. No, 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 no. Okay, then I'm going out. Why would you leave me, Jane, just because I don't read? You like some other kid better than me? You're going to go find some other kid who you like better? You're my favorite kid right now. Nobody else who's a kid even comes close. So can you take me for a happy meal? It's been a long time, Jane. No, friend, it's actually only been a week. That's a long time. You work too hard. It's boring, Jane. You really shouldn't work so hard. It makes you boring. What are you even doing? Grading papers. Everyone needs a job to pay the bills, Alex. Can I ask you a question, Jane? Can Jesus fly? Sure. Can I ask you a question, Jane? How much do our bones love water? That question is too beautiful to answer, Alex. Jane, can I ask you a question? What if you had to teach a whole class of turtles? I really wouldn't mind. I think if I flew into the middle of the sun, I would find Jesus' body and I would try to help him. Great. Later, we head out into the rain and drive to McDonald's, where we sit in a booth by the window. Before his happy meal is ready, he eats his soft ice cream cone. He's so happy and smiles at me. "It's cold, Jane, just like my ex-wife," he says. His favorite new joke, sponged off of YouTube. It turns out so many things are just like his ex-wife, including the tornado I showed him in a book about weather and the beans I said were too spicy. "Jane, I dreamed I had 50 hearts and they were flying near the woods. I saw the mammy heart. It was a rainbow heart and I touched it and then I was a rainbow too." That's so beautiful. I hope you always have magical dreams. He's trying hard to balance a Happy Meal mouse on a small rubber ball in the booth by the window where January rain pounds the glass. "It's all gravity's fault," he explains. "Do you know about the gravity, Jane?" "Well, it keeps us from floating up off the earth." "Maybe we can get rid of it." "Probably not." I watch him as he tries to balance the little Happy Meal mouse on the red rubber ball again and again and again. Thank you.
Oh. That was so wonderful, so moving. Oh my gosh. And if you want to hear that again, it could be on the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series audio pretty soon. So you can tune in and hear all of this again. Joy Priest is the author of Horsepower, Pitt Poetry Series 2020, and the editor of Once a City Said, a Louisville Poetry Anthology 2023. Wow, you've been busy. Wow. Okay, she is a recipient of an NEA fellowship, many other awards, and her poetry and criticism and essays have been in Boston Review, LA Review of Books, Swanee Review, and others. And she teaches in the Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing program at the University of Pittsburgh. Please welcome Joy Priest.
I'm very short, but I have to do that a lot, so I know what I'm doing. Okay. The night never ended when one of us died. The night never ended when one of us died. The dice and smoke kept rolling. The town we lived in already felt like the end. When the phone rung, I was always the one to answer. Someone asking for directions, but they couldn't hear my small voice over everyone sighing resolutely together about where we'd ended up. From the porch, all you could smell was the waste plant. But when they sent the boy cousin to the corner store for more beer, I ran to it. The way we ran to base followed him there with my eyes, which saw what the grown folks didn't want us to see, which kept inside the self what they could not. My auntie had on gold boots, lumens. She stood beneath the wind chime inside a lightless vacuum connecting new ports like constellations, the burning fresh to the burning out, the boots being the only reason I noticed her there. When she sat down at the card table, her belly was still a perfect globe, just like the poof on her head, the puff exiting her lips like a life expiring. When Uncle's backhand met her cheek for asking, not thinking where he was headed on his way out the door, she fell from grace like that angel who knew too much, leaving one boot upright on the linoleum, ownerless but luminous nonetheless. Hadn't she learned by her age you only escape into yet another paradise to fall from? The party continued under the lights that washed the poor country of my parents' kitchen red. So when the blood ran down Auntie's legs, we all thought it was her water had broken. It is best not to confide in anyone your own victimhood. When a family's pain falls into a girl, only she can bring it out of her body alone, by death or instrument, embryonic little lyrics squeezed out onto the screen or canvas or page. Is the new book, so I don't know where things are yet. Thank you, Joan and Chris, for having me. This is like my first real reading in Pittsburgh. I moved here 2 years ago, so Joan got some sense. Okay, I was like, "What's going?" No, I know Pittsburgh. Y'all hard up here. Y'all like, you an outsider? Fucking, you gotta fucking charm us first. But I'm happy to be here and like. You know, I'm glad it took this long for me to get a reading here because, like, now I have, like, 8 friends here that are, like, you know, and that's nice. So, actually, and also Soledad, who I met in 2014, and Dave, and, yeah, so it's good. Wait 2 years before you read somewhere when you move. Okay. My first kiss was in a choir room where we hung the white robes. It was the drummer. It was the drums. My first kiss was with a girl who shared a name with my older sister in the strip club on the corner that held women like secrets. My first kiss was French for already, the first word in the phrase already seen. Vous, 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 in the sun-striped Sunday room and us white-robed. My first kiss was innocent the way animals are innocent. Holy, the way blood is holy. My blood beat was the drummer. It was the drums I entered suddenly and forever. Sister, my sister, and me already seen. That's how it felt. Our sun-striped skin, the faint piano, the robes hung up. I'm like really cute, but my poems aren't, sorry. I'm like, I don't know if I match, but you know. I'm gonna read one book, no I won't, but you know. One poem from the first book, which I'm tired of reading from, but love her, she's like 5 years old this year, and this is like the only copy I have at this point, which means I don't need to sell anymore because they're sold. And but if you want one, I think like Whitewell has it, City of Asylum, and all those places. Whitewell actually did my launch during the pandemic, which I was really grateful for. So, and that was before I knew I'd be here. So, very serendipitous. Okay, this is the one poem from Horsepower I'm going to read is Elegy for Kentucky. So I grew up outside of Churchill Downs where they run the Kentucky Derby, but I grew up stable side, which was like a whole hustle culture back there. We had a lot going on, working class, like peripheral economies. And so throughout the collection, the speaker and this horse, which is like, I think of as the birth horse, because it was the horse the year she was born, sort of morph in and out of each other. So that just might be important. Elegy for Kentucky. Nowhere to drive night upon night that last summer, but back to the cokey couple I was crashing with in their 26-year habit. On the way there, the same horse always dying at the curve before I turned like a kitschy disco ball onto their street, name I can't recall. There she lay toppled like a toy figurine, calm but huffing, a laboring machine making steam, though the cold air belonged to June, its grief. a filly, done before becoming a mother, great belly black and wide as all surrender, and that magnificent face still against the grass, waiting on the end. There she was every time, whispering something to me, a line throbbing, a visible heartbeat I watched in the mirror for hours with my huge horse eyes. I needed to see her to make sure she was still there. I went the same way each evening, wanting to feel something, to see this once immortal creature get up. Any weak thing was welcome to finish me then, and when he came into the room with bridle and bit on his 26-year high, when he came up on me where I was lying at that curve in my mind, arms and teeth numb, I did not resist. Just a muted yell inside for months before it lit on me like an ancestor. As a child, I followed my grandfather across the street behind our house, Longfield Avenue, but backside of the track where the thoroughbreds for that maize derby were trapped, bored of what they were bred for, all their royalty within a corral. My hand, a child's offering, was empty when they snorted and drew their worn noses across my palm, yet it was in their nature to remain friendly toward me. My home did not keep its promise after my grandfather died. There was no protection for what I was without him, lone black filly, finished before becoming. She must have tired of standing there high-headed, waiting for me to ride her out of that war, to call out, "Let's go, we are done here." Okay, I don't use any substances anymore. I would say unfortunately, but it's kind of cool. It's kind of nice. But anyways, when I used to smoke weed, I love to watch like documentaries. And like sometimes I still have like cravings, and so like Tom Hanks came out with this new nature documentary recently, and I was like, "Ooh, that would be so good with a joint." But I was like, "Damn." But I happened to be high, and then I came up on this Explained episode that was like about marijuana and learned some really cool facts. So I thought I would use them. This poem is called Desire. To heighten THC levels and make cannabis more potent, the female plant erupting in pollen is isolated from the male plant, made to long, beg the seed. It eventually begins to overproduce a sticky psychoactive resin. "Kind of grotesque, actually," says Michael Pollan about the oozing female flowers glittering in diamond tears. "Flowers which have exploded in vain to access the male," wrote Linnaeus, father of botany, in 1753, sundering nature into taxonomies, the carceral gender fantasy that created the new world. But outside of it, Suzanne Césaire's plant human is abandoning herself to the rhythm of universal life, vegetating in laborless rebellion. And Jane Cortez is calling, "Tear the sexual leaves of grief from your heart." It's the first time I read that poem out loud. I was like, damn, this is fucked up. Even plants gotta deal with misogyny and shit. Like, can we just come? God damn it. Always trying to control our, you know, fuck. That's why women are undersexed. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure there are women in here having a great sex life. They're like 50, and I'm happy for them. My time is coming. Okay. This last poem I'm going to read. sorry. Just like, you know, I don't know how not to be earnest. Okay. This is a new poem, one of the newest poems. It's not in this book. It's not in the new book. And I moved here from Houston. This poem is called Houston. Never mind that I stepped outside for a cigarette one night and mistook the flying American cockroach for a nocturnal hummingbird. drifting through the Marquez landscape, its delusional heat. Never mind the constant construction blocking the sidewalk or statistics like 1.5 road rage shootings on average per day, the drivers who treated me walking as a mirage. I loved coming down Westheimer during sunset, light flaming off the 80s sci-fi skyline, grabbing wee banh mi and barbecue in a drive-thru, the Bam Bam at Juiceland. Does it matter that I once nearly shot two big bug suckers off my wall with the Taurus G2C? Or that I lusted after the mansions in River Oaks, downloading addresses to my mind, scrolling Zillow back in my mildewed apartment to see inside the lives of Texas oil families? What about the fact that no one loved me naked? Or that the only living creatures I saw my first few months there were Luna, that's my dog, and the little lizards that slithered across concrete when my big foot quaked their grass beds? I was the catastrophe to a world I couldn't see. And this was the city where it happened, where I rode an ambulance to the almost end, where I came to driving down the street blasted, that one last drunk, where I fucked sober, the one who built rockets and the one who built stages. It was a landscape of lilt and luminance, where I quit using, quit smoking, quit the only way I'd known, to walk the bayou and return to the mind I tried to escape, the me before, the forgotten child. Thank you.
Wow. Yes. Well, I have been to Houston. I'm so, yeah, I am really glad you're here. Okay. And a belated welcome to Pittsburgh. Cedric Rudolph is a Black gay writer living in Pittsburgh. He works as a visiting lecturer for the at the University of Pittsburgh's writing department. He has also taught for the Institute of Anti-Racist Education and has led workshops in Allegheny County Jail. His publications include the Pittsburgh Neighborhood Guidebook, Coal Hill Review, and others, and Eavesdrop Magazine awarded him third place. It should have been better than that. For their Queer Joy contest, please welcome Cedric Rudolph.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. I'm gonna make sure I speak into the microphone here. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Joan. I am going to start with a poem called Hard to Face the Day. And I'll just say that I'm consider myself generally spiritual now, but I was raised Baptist. And not only raised Baptist, yeah, you too? Okay. Not only raised Baptist, but raised Baptist in Alabama. So, but it's sort of how things stick with you. Hard to face the day. I get down to Mavis Staples. The backbone meets metal. My heart sweats as if in church. I called out, well, when the preacher tilted his body at 45 degrees after riffing off James 2:14. He wiped sweat from his brow. Yes, saints, don't nobody need to prod you to holler from a kept place inside. Might just save me. On days when I can't muster and I want to smell the buttery earth. On days I shut my eyes and see only my own self. I put on 99 and a half. That church boy rhythm might just save me. When I ain't got no more come hither or oh father who arts. My might sizzles on a stove. My innocence freezes in an ice block. But Jesus is on the main line. So I sing that chorus with Mavis's contralto. I need that spirit that sweeps up gay church boys. I can't join the ones who went down by their own hand. I have work to do, O Lord, in this unkempt world greased over. This world and dirtied us in its wake. I'm working on a manuscript right now, and I had to cut a poem called Woman. And so I'm going to read that one because I'm very fond of the poem. I'm not happy that I had to cut it. So here we go. Woman. I rip the dress and tear it free. My up is under, my down is cover. I run a marsh to moon the geese, shake my rear, stick my feet in drippy clay, eat fresh earth, greens, cartilage of the tree, mountain smoke. Bees fly into me, bounce back, wings stuck to my shoulder, red smear in my teeth. The whole earth's a drop of water I drink. Still, artists try my likeness on the page. That was a persona poem, and I usually read a lot of persona poems, so I'm happy that I'm not reading a lot of them tonight. But I'm going to read two poems sort of back to back. The first poem is a sonnet love poem slash lust poem. That was pretty self-explanatory. But then the second one is called Sifri, and it's about Labby Sifri. I am really into music. It's sort of my saving grace. And I've discovered Labby Sifri, who came up with the song I Got The, which was a big hit in the 1970s. He's a British singer-songwriter, poet, just amazing, interesting person. And Eminem sampled the song in the 90s, and it had a resurgence. And then I also mentioned Melvin Dixon and Christopher Gilbert in the poem, who are two black poets. And I think the reason why they make it into the poem is because I feel like I love their work, and I feel like I would be a different person if I knew their work when I was younger. Hook up. Who knows the source of your righteous shine? Whatev, I fucks with the light. Friday night, I gave you head. What's more, I sip the orange cream aura that orbits your body while Archer streams. Prone, you invite me to lie, flip your behind over where I smooth my hand. You're a rumble, a rabble, disjointed soul on a human dog bed. Some days, I am dirge, walking parks half-baked, undone. You pack the light, you pack and light the bowl for my sake. You, parable in motion, parable with crumbles of Keith and his rug. I should have delivered food to the encampment, visited my neighbor in jail. I've just been stuck, heaven on my mind, while the shallowness sits at center of my life. Sifri. I got the here with me, naming this one for another black poet I never knew, a Dixon, a Gilbert. Now that I've found you, something deepens inside. The snow at my door is voiceless. The air this time of year crackles through my thermals. Yes, I got the blues and anything else collects on the cuff of my pants. I got the beat, lines for Sifri. Maybe the start of a song, though I don't have the acumen to compose on treble clef. How about these words? I pulverize flour, roll it up, wonder if my ancestors got this high. 20 years from now, my heart turns diamond from the pressure. I'll harness my tears to voltage. Then I won't ask dumbass questions like, why does it feel like this to be lonely? I know how late I came out, years I reasoned myself away from the man with eyes trained on me. When I come down, my nerves steady. I don't want to smash my valuables anymore. I've got the night with me here, and she writhes with frost, full of broke bottle sprinkles and fall apart paper. Immense black I crawl into until the lemon punch of morning. And this is my last poem that I'll read. You can't see because I don't have like it projected behind me, but it is a prose poem and it's in two sections. In the second section, there's gonna be sort of a lag because there's an epigraph. It's a quote from the Bible that starts off the second section. Oh, and also I should say this is part of a longer series. There's a character called Diva. And her name is Chenille O'Day, but most of the time in the poems I call her Diva. Divaless. One. Those mansion pillars toppled. Back gate padlock smashed. Graffiti artists hellbent leave 2, 4, 6 mud prints on the bathroom tile. Tag grand mirrors with devil horns. Imagine the pansy rot. Iris blood spilling purple over raised flower beds. Olympic-sized swimming pool, an estate big enough to drive Nick Cage to envy. Who comes back to this place? And who roosts? The ghost of Elvis strutting the lanai? Lena Horne staring through the transom into the basement bar, nothing there but dusty bottom shelf. We want the glamour. Not the pathos attached. All those colors she is. A pearlescent gown, gold teeth, not the thinning bank account offshore. Still adorned while estranged from child, missing a mother buried in the South, she left 3 minks in the closet. Thieves won't find vestige of her most crucial breakdown. She smeared lipstick on a marble tile, turned it over, tamped it down. 2. The lilies of the field toil not, neither do they spin. Even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Matthew 6:28-29. In the UP National Park, a flock of blue jays, so many I resigned count, lit the branches overhead and the grounds. I watched, silent, afraid my next step could scare them on. None of these arrayed, I must amend. When a queen attaches lashes, dons a Juliet cap, slinks the floor as she sparkles, I must amend, Lord, and offer as evidence the garment I hold. Yesterday, matte black, until I looked closer and saw dragon scales. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now I want to give you, I'm going to share a little secret with you. I don't know if you know this or not, but we're going to be meeting again in 2 weeks. And that is Tuesday, May the 27th. And the readers, the poets and writers that night will be, and some of them are even here tonight, Daniela Buccelli, M. Scott Douglas, Marguerite Miller, Ed Simon, and Anastasia Walker. If you don't know who M. Scott Douglas is, he's the founder and editor of Main Street Rag. A whole bunch of us had our first books published with him. He's a real nice guy. So Daniela, Scott, Marguerite, Ed, Anastasia. So you should be here, of course. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and I thank you all for coming out tonight. It's the first night of the season. It really is always encouraging when the first, the kickoff, people show up. This is really good. Okay, and the open mic sign-up, my dears, is right here. And if you might wish to be on the Pittsburgh Poetry E-Blast, that labor of love done by someone whom you know, and would like to know about poetry events, you can just write down your name and your email, and you too will get an email a day from someone who will remain nameless, okay, about great events in Pittsburgh that are created by many of you. So let's take a little break, and we need to have the poets and writers right up here, right now, and then when we come back, if some of you want to do some book sales, let people know if you have books. We'll remind. Thanks.
Okay, hello. We're gonna start up the open mic. Is everybody on my list who wants to be on my list? All right. Okay, I wanna reiterate something that Joan said earlier. Wow, that was a fucking great reading. Thank you so much, everybody. But it's not done yet. This is still happening. When Jimmy Savitic hosted the series, Jimmy ended every night reading one of his own poems. It was always a highlight. If you didn't attend any of those events, he was equal parts scatological and spiritual, and he melded the two wonderfully in his own inimitable way. But Jimmy always read last. He always read in the back half. He always read really as a part of the Oakman and Mike group. And I always felt that was Jimmy saying, this is just as important, if not more important, and that's why I'm reading here with the people who do the open mic. It's never an afterthought. In fact, really, you can also look at the reading as everybody who just read is the preamble to you guys, if you so choose. The first time I ever read in public was during an open mic. 30 years later, I'm hosting one. It could happen to you. But it's really important. It's a really important part of this series, and we're really proud to continue it and proud to have people sign up for this to do it. Joan wants to remind all of you, no fucking Longfellow, no Hiawatha. We want to move it along, but, you know, enjoy it, but no pages and pages. One page? Two pages?
Two pages.
Not consecutive. But.
Not in a little bit of print.
Okay. All right. We're gonna look at your font size.
You've seen that trick before.
Don't fuck with Joan. That is the number one rule of the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. Do not fuck with Joan. Okay.
First up, we have Taylor. Taylor, come on down.
How's everyone doing? All right. Thanks for all the reading, all the readers today. It was really, really lovely. I have two poems. I'm working on a series that'll maybe be done before I die. I'm the least prolific writer, but we'll get there eventually. It's called Letters to Martha. Tell me, Martha, how does one decide between what's been taken and what's been given? Do you remember the night I drew a thin line mustache above your lips? You looked just like Brigitte Bardot, hands on hips. You had me sit in the velvet chair. You danced the Prisiatka, the night as bright as a moon is dark. What was it you said about living in a world without wanting? Was it God or just dying that made us all Shakespeare? Between you and me, I think the world was always broken. And maybe that's why everyone is always looking for paradise, for you in a city somewhere where the lights never go out. And maybe that's why you're still sitting on the roof of this building. How long before the new year comes? How long before we know our own names? If they ask, I tell them. Martha says it's easy when you close your eyes. Sometimes even I think I know. I say, yes, this is me. That's number one. Next one is, again, Letters to Martha. None of them really have titles, but this one is based on eschatology, so on eschatology. On summer nights in West Hollywood, you can find Martha with David Hockney sitting by a swimming pool. Here in endorphin-heavy country, Hockney tells us, the end is just another way of forgetting. Everywhere else, it's a reason to fuck, to lie, to go out at night. I still can't remember how long it's been since I said yes to anything. What does the end mean to a Taoist, I wonder? He stole that line from me, you know, Martha says. On nights like these, we steal the moon. We cover it, bury it beneath our feet. They never knew what to do with it anyway up there in the dark, she says. Down here, we keep it safe, which is to say we have secrets. I tell Martha my pockets are full of letters, but she doesn't hear me. In 100 years, Venice Beach will be underwater. I can see Hockney's swimmers swimming farther out to sea. What does the end mean to a Taoist? In a way, we've always been here, watching it play out. This was never a Western, but some days I think it'll do. Some days I think it never really mattered. Thanks.
Thank you, Taylor. Next up is Shelby.
Is that good? Okay. I'm just going to read one poem. Can everybody hear me? Okay. This is called Ghost Mother. She once brushed your hair so hard, your scalp ached for days. And when you winced, she said, some things must hurt to be right. There is tenderness in her small failures. Your mother is a ghost moving like a draft through the cracks of your ribs. She is witness to your quiet rituals, peeling an orange over the kitchen sink, watching the rind curl in on itself like a body giving up. Your mother is all at once dragging you from the burning building, palms still cupped around the hot belly of a match. There is always a faint scent of burning, intemporal and aromatic. You're too lazy to find another word for violence, so you tell her she is the concept of violence, which is to say she is cutting edge, dismantling everything she finds unbearable about you. Your mother is your most faithful ghost. It is only right to move toward the thing that possesses, because, she says, stop crying. because she says, I love you, don't you know that? Thank you.
Thank you, Shelby. Next up, we have a little slice of Jersey right here in Pittsburgh, Mr. Don Wentworth.
Thanks, everybody. This will be brief because that's what I do. Mother's Day just passed, and in my family, my mother was known as a bit of an Irish diva, Cedric. We used to tease her lightly about it, but I don't quite know how to say this, so I'm just going to say it flat out. She did get the last word when she died on Mother's Day a few years back. So we never forget her. Never. And this poem's for her. The whole ocean in a single drop. Mother. Thanks.
Thank you, Don. Our last reader tonight, and I hope I pronounced the name right, is Ahimsa Shakti. Did I get that right? Yeah. All right.
Mostly did this because my inclination is to hide in the back of the room, but you guys made it easier for me. Less of you, less of a challenge. So this is a prose poem, and it's part of a poetry book I'm working on. It's a bunch of love poems that kind of chronicle an emotional journey through a relationship. This one's called On This Side. The day you asked to talk was the day I thought you were ready to listen, only to hear ridiculous spew forth as some sort of proclamation of who I am to you. Here, I thought you were ready to put yourself back into our relationship, but really, you showed up to defend your right to be in that other one, those other ones. On Mother's Day, when you showed up at my door, I thought you were ready to make amends, only to watch you pick up our son and ignore me. Fourth, now fifth year into this shit. If you're being an ass, let's call it that. And here I had it that you were going to use this day to show up with 4 years worth of flowers and apologies, but even remembering this year would have been enough. Meanwhile, the dust on the ceiling fan reminds me of the never-ending to-do lists that distract me from fully living, while you go on some rant about freedom. And I think when June Carter Cash sings her song, Burning Ring of Fire, she adds layers and depths of meaning and emotion that Johnny Cash fails to deliver. There are always two sides of the same experience, and how I can relate to that. Her version, her burn, I can feel the red of it. The hardest part to bear is knowing you didn't choose me. Us, not really, when I knew for sure you would. And knowing I can't put you in a relationship with me, only you can do that. On this side of our fire, I hike the truth into me. And as I drive home, despair crashes head on towards me. And I picked that one because of the Mother Day theme. Not all of us have a good experience of Mother's Day, unfortunately. And I have one more that's a little bit more fun, not as sad. And it's short. And this one's called Your Game, and it's a golden shovel, and it's after Gwendolyn Brooks and Public Enemy. On Thursday night, you play chess well, like you're out of luck, or don't give a fuck. I'm first pawn out on the board of your life, asking price of your sacrifice. The game you've got going? Yeah, keep playing. As if love's all move and counter groove, and I, the gambit, deployed to win. Hey, don't call me queen if that's not what you mean. Any verse rehearsed is askew for nothing. And vertically it reads, well, fuck your game if I don't mean nothing.
All right, thank you so much, Ahimsa. I totally agree with you about June Carter Cash. Johnny was great. June is better. Thank you so much for sticking around, for being with us tonight. Hope you had a great time. We'll be back in 2 weeks on, was it the 27th?
27th.
On Tuesday the 27th, with a bunch of great writers. So hope to see you then. Thank you. Thank you so much.